Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and it's always fun for me to have somebody on who's been a guest a while back, and we can catch up and see what they're doing. And my friend Christine Chapurik from Pretty by Hand is here. She has done incredible things since we talked to her last time. Christine, I'm so glad to have you back.
Oh, I'm so happy to be back, Pat. Thanks for having me.
You know, you're writing online about your work and you're designing. I think I've been following you like forever. when did you start writing online? Do you even remember?
Oh, I remember. I was smart enough to pick a very significant day. I started blogging on Valentine's Day, 2011.
Oh,
seems like a really long time ago now.
You are smart. You pick a day you can remember. Yeah. You know, one of the things, and maybe everybody tells you this, but I'll tell you again, is that your photography and your layouts of what you're doing, it's like they're just a feast for the eye. They're so gorgeous. Your name, Pretty by Hand, for your company. I mean, it just all fits together. Why did you pick that name?
Somebody asked me that question recently, and I had to think back to that afternoon my husband and I were sitting at the computer, because in 2011, it still wasn't super impossible, but it was becoming more and more difficult to find a URL or a domain name, because a lot of them were taken up. So it took us quite a while to come up with a combination of words that I liked. So we kind of had a list of words that I thought would describe the sort of content that I wanted to have on my blog. I was very clear that I wanted this to be only about the stuff that I make. I don't do family stuff. I don't do personal stuff on the side. It's all strictly about what I make. So I knew it was going to be something about what I do with my hands, how I do it by things by hand. And, you know, I'm often using the word pretty to describe my aesthetic, my style, what I like. It's kind of funny because I know everybody has their own idea of what is pretty for them. So I thought it would translate easily that people could understand, like everyone understands what pretty means to them. And by hand, of course, that's what a lot of us sewists do. Even though we use a machine, I think we still consider that to be under the quote unquote by hand category. Mm-hmm. So I can't even remember the other words or what else we tried to come up with, but we hit, oh, Pretty by Hand is available. Okay, do it. Let's just do it.
Good. It's a yes. Take it now. We'll think later.
Done. That's right.
Well, you know, it does perfectly meld, and it is sort of, you think back, Christine, just think like you came up with that and it actually has fit you all these years.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, sometimes I get a little bit doubtful of myself, and I, you know, naming things. I remember when I had to name my children, it was very stressful because they're going to be stuck with this handle for life, right?
Yep.
I just worried a lot about it. And so I have my moments where I think, am I still really in love with this name? And, you know, I always come back to, yeah, there really is, I don't think, anything else that can describe what I do. And people have come to know me by that name. I think I'd be silly to give it up now.
Yeah, I think it's just like a whole circle for you, and it all works, all the little parts and everything coming together. And your new venture, which is so exciting, is your fabric lines for Moda. I know. It was like when I saw your name popping up, I'm like, yay, that's so exciting.
You're such a dear. Thank you.
Well, you know, tell me a bit about your sort of, I would maybe call it a journey to design fabric, because you were talking to me at the show about how, you know, this isn't sort of like a whim you had. This was something you really thought a lot about.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, people come at fabric design from many different places, and I think everyone's story is as individual as the person in themselves. But I'm pretty sure mine started, not consciously, but I've been quilting for over 30 years, and I've been living around fabric on bolts almost since then. One of my very first retail jobs was working in a fabric department, in a larger department store. And I just loved folding fabric and rolling it off the bolts and cutting it for customers and seeing what they were putting together and just, you know, making garments. And so I love fabric for the designs that are on them. Mm-hmm. So fast forward almost 3 decades, I was working my quote unquote real job. I don't say that word seriously, but my day job that I go to, mm-hmm. I saw a need in my company for in-house graphic design because we were hiring it out for tens of thousands of dollars a year. And looking at the work that they were making for us, I knew that if I just had the skills, I could do this myself for sure. Mm-hmm. So I offered to do the work to earn a graphic design certificate if they would pay for it. And lucky me, they agreed in a heartbeat. So I did a couple of years of night classes at a local university and nearly killed myself in the process. That's a lot of work when you're doing
that. Going to school at night, working full time, and doing your designing business. It's like, that's like three jobs.
I know. For people who've been following me for a long time on my blog, they'll know that, you know, it was a little bit of cricket action going on in my blog. It wasn't nearly as busy as I would have liked to, but there's only so many hours in the day, and I need my beauty sleep, so I had to focus on school. And, you know, just a comment to anyone who's listening who are considering going back to school as an adult learner, I have to tell you, it was the best experience. Going back and being so focused on knowing exactly what you want to do and just, wow, it was just so, I feel really lucky that I had the opportunity to do that, and I would do it again in a heartbeat. But in the meantime, while I was doing these classes, of course, my mind was not thinking exclusively that these new skills I was developing would apply to my day job.
You have a little other option you might work on.
That's right. So it's a very common dream, I think, for a lot of quilters to design fabric, whether it's, you know, just sort of a whim or it becomes a really serious, hardcore desire to do that. So I just knew that as soon as I had the skills to do this, I could make that really sort of quiet dream that I'd always had in the background. Now I knew how I was going to make it a reality. So here I am.
What is your first line called?
Good question. It's called First Romance. And I thought, well, you know, it's my first collection. I wanted to have the word first in there somehow. And, you know, I love all things romantic and, you know, just that whole style, that aesthetic. Is a very good way to describe me. Plus, romance is a good word to describe the relationship I've had with quilting and fabric all my life. I love it. It makes my heart so happy. I love sharing this this pastime with friends. I have a lot of good friends in it. So it's been a romantic relationship for me.
Yeah, I love how thoughtful you are, Christine. You know, there's everything is sort of has a little extra layer to it. We have these talks always go really fast, so we have maybe about 2 minutes. Tell me what inspired your lines, you know, your drawings.
Oh, when I started really seriously approaching fabric design, it didn't take me very long to realize that, you know, feedback reproduction is a really popular style, a popular approach to fabric design. And I thought, When I started studying feed sacks, I realized that about 80 to 90% of the prints in my personal stash were feed sack reproduction, and I just never knew it. I had no idea. So I realized, well, that's what I love. That's what I want to own. That's what I buy. That's what I like to sew with. So that's what I want to make.
Yeah, that it is. It's funny when you start, you take that step back and you really take a deep look at what do you want to own? I think that's a neat way to phrase it. So feed sack prints, they're smaller prints, but your colors are more vibrant.
Oh, yes. I don't do strict reproduction. I like to find design elements in feed sack textiles that draw my eye, like a particular flower or a particular element. And so I'll recreate them, I'll resize them, I'll recolor them, I'll, you know, lift elements from different prints and put them together in a unique way so that, you know, I'm hoping that I can offer something that's a little new and a little different to quilters who are looking for new fabric.
Yeah, I love it because it is that sort of romantic soft, but it's not, but it's got a little punch of, the color's more punched up, which I like a lot. So, and you have green and pink and red and yellow. Did you have one of the colors you were like, oh, this is my favorite? I won't tell the others.
Oh, yeah, pink.
A pink.
If you know me at all, you know that my favorite color is pink. It always has been. It always will be. I'm no longer embarrassed at the cliche of it because I have an emotional reaction to this color. I love it. And, yeah.
Pink. It'll always be pink. Others all know that pink is first. They all know that. And
yes.
they're fine, all the other colors.
Yes, they're not offended.
They're not offended. They're like, oh, no, it's just her. We know that. It's okay. We'll be second seat. So, Christine, when is it in stores?
It's shipping in October, November this year.
Okay. So that is wonderful. I'm so excited for you.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat. I'm still pinching myself over this one.
Well, you did really good, and I can't wait to sew with some of it. So thank you for being on here and telling us.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat. I always have a lot of fun chatting with you.
Everybody can visit Christine at prettybyhand.com, and she's also does a lot on Instagram. We'll be back right after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Join the 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge in March for the Ultimate Pillowcase Competition. Gather a team and compete in one of two categories during the month of March to make pillowcases, earn points, and maybe be crowned the Ultimate Pillowcase Champion. The top three teams in each category will be awarded cash prizes. Even if you're not forming a team, you can watch all the action with weekly voting and daily prizes. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/pillowcase madness for more information.
Quilt along with us in 2017. Join our fourth annual quilt along by stitching a wall hanging, a throw, or a one block table topper, or all three projects. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/quiltalong for a list of participating bloggers and designers and to see photos of what staff members and other readers are sewing. Share your photos on social media by using the hashtag APQQuiltalong to join the fun.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Christopher Thompson here. He writes out at the Tattooed Quilter, and I was lucky enough to do an event this summer where I got to spend a little bit more time getting to know Christopher at a Baby Lock event. So Thanks for being here, Christopher. I'm glad you could jump in here and make some time.
Well, hi. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here with you.
You know, I wanted to just get a little backstory because you were telling me you actually have a lot of quilters in your family. Do you always remember there being quilts around?
Oh, yes. As far as I can remember, there was always some lady in my family quilting, from my great-grandmother to my grandmother, and a couple of great-uncles even have quilted. So, yes, as far back as I can remember, someone has always been quilting.
So when you were growing up, I mean, this was sort of like that's just what you had. Like in my family, there was no quilter. So, but did you think to yourself, I'd like to try that at any point?
You know, I did, because I would spend the weekends with my grandmother, and we were often at my great-grandmother's, and she had a sewing shed, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the weekends, that's where we were at. On Saturdays, we were, you know, always doing something with fabric, whether it was quilting or some sort of craft. It just kind of was already in my blood and ingrained in my head that I would be working with fabric at some point in my life.
You know, I think that's funny that your grandma had, or was it your great-grandma had a quilting shed? Like, do you know that that was very progressive to have their own building, their own area?
Oh, yes, and even, like, she was the first experience of a quilt guild that I can remember. You know, I obviously at a young age didn't know what a quilt guild was, but they had, you know, meetings. And even some of those meetings were recorded in the local newspaper. So
oh my
fascinating
goodness.
To me. Yeah.
Where was what part of the country was this in?
Southwest Virginia.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Right in the heart of the mountain.
Yeah, down below me in Virginia. I'm up at the top.
Yep.
So
yep.
When did you decide, you know, you started making quilts at one point. Your aesthetic is much more modern than traditional. When did you decide to write about it, to start, you know, putting your work that you're doing online, and then, you know, because this is your second business. You run, you know, you have a day job as well.
Yeah. So I started the Tattooed Quilter around 2011, 2012. And it all started with my boss at the time. We decided to do a craft fair at work. And 10% of the proceeds would go to a charity of our choice. And she was very handy, you know, would do knitting and some crocheting, and she could sew as well. And I was like, you know, I know how to sew. I know how to make quilts. And so I think I'm going to make some flying geese pillows. And I made, I think it was 8 flying geese pillows for this craft fair, sold all 8. And that was my first introduction, and I would say that was probably about 2009. That was my first introduction to modern fabric, any sort of fabric designer. You know, growing up, we worked with polyester or, you know, some sort of cheap cotton you would buy at, you know, your local fabric shop. It wasn't anything fancy like we have today. I call it fancy, you know what I mean, designer fabric.
Right.
And so I made those pillows and thought, gosh, you know, I really miss this. I miss this, you know, part of my life. And so I got back into it, bought my first machine, you know, jumped online, was reading everything I could about blogging. You know, I had no idea that that was out there, you know, because I grew up with it and we didn't have that, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, we had books and I, you know, learned from the ladies in my family, but to see this whole other side of it was so fascinating to me. And so I started a blog. And it started with my logo, actually, because I said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to have a brand. Mm-hmm. And so I got a logo, got a blog, and was blogging for a little while until I realized this whole Instagram thing was happening. You know, I was already on Instagram and was posting pictures of my food and my shoes and, you know, things you do. And I didn't know there was a quilt side of it and a fabric side of it. And so I got into that. And quickly realized that my clan of people and people that, you know, I was connecting with the most were on Instagram versus blogging. So I pretty much switched the Tattoo Quilter over to mostly Instagram, but I still blog every now and then.
Yeah, you do. And that you can put like more pictures together all at once. You can actually tell your story a little bit longer story on your website then.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, tell me your what kind of quilts you like to make. You know, what is it when you're making, because you live actually in New York City, right?
I do, 3 blocks from Times Square.
Yeah, so you probably have, you've told me you have a small space. And so, you know, is that influencing what you like to make?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I started sewing on a Hoosier antique cabinet. And I actually bought it here in the city, and it is in really great shape. I bought it for $250. And
wow.
You can imagine the top of that Hoosier cabinet, there's space for a cutting mat and a machine, and that's pretty much it. And by cutting mat, I mean, you know, 12 by 18 inch, you know, not a, you know, big mama jama, as I like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I realized I couldn't make larger quilts in my space because I just didn't have the space for it. I didn't have the space for the fabric, didn't have, you know, any sort of design wall. And so I really got into making mini quilts, and it quickly turned into sort of my passion. You know, it's something that I could do on a weekend. It's something I could do in the evenings, and I didn't have to spend a lot of time or space on them. And, you know, mini quilts, it's less fabric, so I don't have to have, you know, a large stash of fabric.
Well, that's true. You don't, you know, you can have a large stash, but you won't actually need it if the quilts are tiny, right? That's...
No, exactly. And I say, you know, I try to use, if I get, you know, some fabric, I try to use it in multiple projects that I can use through it. But there have been times when I've, you know, gotten some fabric and I'm like, you know what, I'm really not inspired, so I'm going to donate this fabric, or I send it to a friend, you know, who will use it for something. But, yeah, I still like to buy fabric.
Yeah, I know. We're quilters, so that's what we do. So when I know that you have coming up, you'll be designing fabric with Riley Blake, which is super exciting. What is going to be your approach to your fabric lines?
Well, you know, it started out really, my approach is really on the fashion side of things. You know, my day job is in fashion, and, you know, it's definitely influenced sort of how I think about fabric. And I look at it from a fashion perspective. You know, I look at fashion magazines. I'm on the streets of New York and seeing fashion. And because my job lets me see trends 6 to 8 months out, it kind of helps when it comes to designing fabric. But my first collection, Blue Carolina, is really an homage to, you know, my heritage of growing up in the mountains of Virginia and spending time, you know, with my grandmother, my great-grandmothers. And if we weren't quilting, we were antique.
Whoop. I think we lost Chris. Whoop. We've got a little bit of lost sound for Christopher. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yay.
Technology.
Technology. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I been totally influenced by fashion. That's really where my fabric designs come from.
You know, one of the other things that you told me about, being that you are around quilts a lot, you do have a huge appreciation for antique quilts. Do you own some?
Oh, own. I have a lot. I have a lot. It started even early on. I can remember probably in my early teens buying, you know, some antique quilts, and it's not about necessarily for collecting them for me. It's preserving them, but also using them. There's not one single quilt that I have that I don't use. I tend to rotate them in and out, and, I would buy them at, you know, an antique shop or, you know, when I lived on the West Coast, there was a huge flea market in San Francisco, and I would buy some there. And I found a couple here, you know, in New York City. But, yeah, I have quite a few.
Quite a few. So, well, you know, that'll be, I'm sure, somewhat of inspiration for your fabrics. But I know that you have one that you told me was kind of a special antique. It was a gift. Can you tell me how you got that?
Yeah, so... last year, there's a huge flea market, I think it's in Connecticut, Brimfield, and my partner and I went up there, you know, first time we've been, we've heard about it, you know, and how big it was, and so we, you know, left at 3:30 in the morning, we got there at 6,
gosh.
Yeah, prime parking spot, you know, I wanted to beat the crowd, and, I'm an antiquer where I can kind of look at someone's boot and keep passing if I, you know, if I'm not really interested in going in it, Mm-hmm. And we went to this one booth, and this lady had several, you know, antique quilts, and she was using some for displays and whatnot. Well, there was one that caught my eye on her table that was super progressive, you know, for as old as it was. It was very bright, solid, you know, not a lot of print, and it was really worn out, you know, one where, you know, the threads were super thin, and you could see the batting coming through, mm-hmm. and, you know, there were a couple of holes in the back of it, and I just fell in love with it. And she said, well, you know, I'll sell it to you at the end of the day, you know, $30. And I said, wow, okay, okay, well, you know, we're going to keep, we'll keep coming around. So, you know, I ended up buying a quilt from another lady, and it was the end of the day, and I said, you know what, Jack, I'm just super tired. Let's, you know, go. And we, you know, we were still going till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and, you know, you can imagine getting up at 3:30 on the road, and I was just wiped out. And I said, no, I think I'm going to pass on that quilt. Well, he knew how much I really wanted that quilt, so he called the lady. Mm-hmm. And we got, you know, her business card early on. And he called the lady and said, you know, do you remember this quilt? My partner and I were there. And she goes, yeah. So, yeah. Well, I sold it to a person in London.
Oh.
Well, she gave Jack the contact information. Jack called the new owner of the quilt in London. And they sold it back to Jack. Well, I had no idea. And at Christmas time, and he kept saying, you know, oh, I have this last, you know, gift for you. And, you know, it's. You know, I think you're going to really love it. And I, you know, didn't have it, no idea, because I didn't really want anything for Christmas. I didn't ask for anything.
Yeah.
And so got the box. And it was kind of a big box. And I was like, oh, wow, what is this? Well, I opened it up. And first, you know, panel that I pulled back of the box, saw that quilt. And, Pat, I just burst into tears.
Oh.
And I can't even talk about it now without getting emotional. It was just the most thoughtful thing that someone has done for me. And to think about that quilt journey really touched me, not just our journey with the quilt recently, but, you know, from, you know, whoever made it to where.
From start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To avoid mixing up various size strips once cut, you can write the measurements on the strip selvedge. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for the price of one. That's a full year free. Every issue is packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, detailed photography, complete materials lists, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today at allpeoplequilt.com.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show. Be sure to visit Christopher at the Tattooed Quilter. That was a great story. We had to sort of squeeze in the last bit of it there. So my next guest is Emily Brecklaw of the Caffeinated Quilter. I love all the names for the websites today. Have you noticed them? They're all fun names. And of course, you know, caffeine. I just, you know, had to check out her website many years ago, but actually, Emily and I sort of, I wrote about a project she did for a magazine on the Downton Abbey. They did a Downton Abbey issue, and I wrote about a quilt she did for that. So that's how we met quite a few years ago, and she's been doing a lot of things since. So, Emily, thank you for being here.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
You know, we're going to talk about your new book, which is on hexagons and is fabulous. But I want to know a little bit about your background, because you did a lot of teaching, you know, early on not for the, you know, quilt industry, but it was also kind of unusual teaching, I thought. What can you tell me about that?
Sure. I did a lot of work both with Texas State Parks, and then also my first real job was with a city park and their Friends organization. And we were, you know, kind of right in the middle of downtown Houston, and I would bring teachers in and teach them how to use the park essentially as an outdoor classroom and tell them about all the different kind of little ecosystems we had and the supplies and equipment they could use when they brought their students out there. And then they would come back and bring their classrooms of kids, and they would get to go and catch butterflies in a little meadow and be able to look at them up close with little magnifying glasses. And then we had a little pond ecosystem where they could go and catch fish and look at them, and a very small little forest, kind of like a tenth of a mile walking trail that the kids could go through and explore and kind of do a little scout.
I just think it's so interesting that, that you were basically a train the trainer. So, and you were training teachers to use the outdoors. I mean, I just think that's fascinating.
Exactly.
It's totally different than any kind of training that I knew people did. What got you into making quilts? You know, what point were you starting to do that?
I kind of started in high school and college. My mom's very creative too. And there was one time we were looking through some magazine or something, and we saw a picture of a yo-yo quilt, and my sister and I were like, man, that would be really fun to do. And so we just took coffee can lids and went and bought fabric and started making these quilts, and I think it took both of us like 3.5 years to finish them. It was absurd. That crazy yo-yo quilt went with me everywhere. I think it had like 976 yo-yos in it by the time it was done.
Oh, my goodness.
That was my very first adventure, and then afterwards I guess it was kind of towards the end of college, and I was getting married, and I wanted to make something for all my bridesmaids. And, you know, we were just trying to figure out something that would be fun to do and something we could do in the time we had. And we decided we could make a quilt for each of them and then kind of pick the colors and things to coordinate each of those friends. It was ridiculously ambitious, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was great. We used the Terry Atkinson's Yellow Brick Road pattern, and I made 5 quilts, and I think the 5th one got finished like after my child was born. It took forever, but they did all get them eventually.
That cracks me up. That really does. We'll just make some quilts for everybody. Now you could probably do them a lot faster.
Yes, nowadays I probably could do it in that amount of time, but at the time it was insanely overambitious, but it was fun.
Now, I did read, and correct me if I read this wrong, but I read that you actually have had a love of hexagons for quite a long time before your book came out.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes, I can't even remember what magazine it was in, some little coaster that just had a little rosette of 5 or 7 hexagons, and then it was a little circular coffee coaster, and I thought, okay, I've got to make that. It's just the cutest thing. And then, you know, after trying it, that was all English paper paste, and it really wasn't that hard. And so it just kind of evolved from there. I ended up making a couple little table runners and things for gifts and different stuff. And then just kind of started playing with ideas and realizing you can take jewel shapes and make them into little hearts. And it just kind of trickled on from there. The more I started playing with the shapes, the more ideas kind of kept evolving. So.
Now, were you doing this also on your website, or was this sort of what you were doing for yourself?
Yeah, I kind of started out for myself, and then once I realized I was kind of having fun with the designs, it all really started because I wanted to write a book kind of right off the bat. Once I had 7 or 8 of them that I just thought were really cool and different. So I kind of started up the website to give myself some credibility and kind of get started that way, and then submitted a book proposal, which did not get accepted, a different publisher. But they were very encouraging and said, you ought to publish these on your own as patterns. They would probably do really well that way. We just don't really see a need for another hexagon book right now. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of where the business got started. But yeah, hexagons were always at the heart of it because they're just, they're fun to play with. And once you get started on them, it's hard to put them down.
I know. I have yet to get the bug. I want to have the bug. The hexagon bug. Isn't that terrible? I want to have
That's
it.
That's awesome.
And I try, but so far it's not quite caught on. Maybe that's good. I don't know. But your book, I just love the way you approached the designs because I think that they're quite unique. Tell me a little bit about the layout of your book. It's called Ventures in Hexagons.
Sure. So it's kind of divided into three parts. And what I wanted to do was essentially get people who had never sewn hexagons excited about it. So the entire first third of the book is devoted to multiple ways of sewing hexagons. You know, I've done English paper piecing. I've done piecing by hand with templates. I've learned how to sew hexagons by machine. I've used Inklingo for a while. You know, there's so many different ways out there and so many more even than what I cover in the book. But kind of the idea was if one method doesn't work for you, try a different one, which is why I wanted to present more than just one basic method for the book.
You know, that's what I liked about it. You know, let me just say something about it in here.
Sure.
Because one of the things is I actually like to hand piece. Now, do I hand piece very much? No. But I like to hand piece.
It's like, right.
And I had never really focused on how you could do hexagons by hand piecing them because you're always, you know, you mostly see them as English paper piecing. Do you find it easy to hand piece them?
I do. That's really my favorite way to sew them right now. To me, it's faster than English paper piecing. So I can see the results quicker. And the other thing I really love about hand piecing is if I get halfway through the project and I suddenly decide I'm tired of hand piecing, you can switch to machine piecing. And as long as your dots are marked in the right start and stop places, you can do both in the same quilt and nobody will ever notice. Almost all the quilts in the book were done that way. You know, a little bit of hand piecing, especially for the smaller areas, and then putting the whole thing together, sewing the rows together with by machine. So that's why I love the hand piecing.
Oh, I'm going to have to try those. You also give a really great sort of pictorial, photos of the pressing. What is one of your tips for pressing these when you're doing them by hand? Because it's different.
When you're English paper piecing, it's easy because they're all glued down and their seam allowances are right there for you. But when I'm doing it by hand or machine, you know, it depends on how your quilt is situated. If all your hexagons have the little pointy side up, you're going to have vertical seams all over your quilt. And if it's pointed with the flat side of the hexagon up, you're going to have horizontal seams. I hope I'm saying that right. But anyway, either way, you pick one of those two directions and you either press up or press to the right, always. It's just kind of arbitrary, but that's the way I do it. And then all the other seams will swirl around it from that. And that's how you can keep them flat and not have to worry about how the intersections will come together.
Yeah, I imagine that makes them a lot nicer in the long run to really pay attention to the pressing.
I think it does, and I think that's one of the reasons people get intimidated with it, is because you look at the back of your quilt and you're like, oh my gosh, where do I start? But, you know, it's one of those nitpicky things, but it is kind of fun and therapeutic once you get going on it to have them all lay flat, and then you have the pretty little seam intersections at the back that just look cool because they're unsewn, so you get little tumbling blocks and pinwheels and stuff on the back of your quilt.
Yeah, so you have to take lots of photos of it before you put it in, you sandwich it, because then they'll never be seen again.
Exactly. You're almost as proud of that as you are of the front.
I know. Let's not quilt this one.
Exactly.
So tell me about the quilts then that you put in the book, that you designed for the book.
Mm-hmm. So I've got 11 different projects, and there's not a whole lot of beginner projects, but there is a table runner at the beginning just for if people want to commit to something, you know, to kind of try out and see what methods they like before they're dealing with hundreds and hundreds of patches. But then it kind of goes on from there. And the idea is, throughout the book, what I tried to do is have different size motifs of hexagons. You know, people really tend to think of hexagons as a one-patch layout. But you can play with it and make them bigger, have bigger and smaller hexagons all in the same quilt, as long as you're keeping to the basic grid. So I really tried to combine different size blocks and play with those ideas through the book. They do get more challenging as they go. So, the first ones are kind of easy and just have a couple of shapes, and then they build from there.
Yeah, they're really, really interesting. That's what I really caught my eye when I opened it up. I thought, wow, they're different. You know, they're not what you're necessarily thinking about, how you colored them. One of my favorites, I won't ask you yet what your favorite is, but my favorite is Hello Orion. And you
Yay.
Have a really interesting sort of assembly of one of the parts. You know, it's called Skewed Singles. What is that about?
So that is probably different. That's the one place in the book I do that. It's kind of like a log cabin method of putting them together. And so I'm certainly not the first person to log cabin piece with a hexagon center by any stretch. But what kind of makes them fun in this particular way it's done in the book is that when you trim them at the end, you're not centering on that hexagon you started on. Matter of fact, I tried to make them as off-center as possible. And the idea behind that was to make each one look very unique so that the whole overall effect of the quilt was stars scattered, you know, across the night sky and not being just perfectly radially laid out like you typically think of with hexagons. I really wanted to make them look as off-center and unradial as I possibly could. So that was the design behind that one.
I think you succeeded. I really like
Thank
it.
Thank you. It was a fun one to put together. I want to do it again now in different colors, too.
Yeah, it's really, really neat. So this is a fantastic book. How is it fairly new? It's fairly new, right?
Yes, have, it came out in May.
Yeah, and you also have a little some graph paper at the back for doing some designing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I tried to include a whole little area in there just to, because that's one of the hardest parts about coming up with your own hexagon designs is, okay, how many hexagons does it need to be fit on a queen-size bed? You know, you can't just measure them like regular 12-inch blocks or something like that. They're a little bit funny. So that's why I included the graph paper in there, was to give people ideas of, if they're starting with 3-inch hexagons, how many do they need to make the different kind of standard size quilts?
So we have about a minute. And you told me that you are doing the American Patchwork and Quilting's UFO Challenge. How are you doing with it?
It's coming along. I actually finished my third oldest UFO ever. So I got a wedding quilt done for my sister and her husband that I think they celebrated their 12th anniversary this summer. So it was pretty overdue. So the challenge is a great motivator.
I know. I'm failing horribly at it myself.
Oh, no.
I'm promoting it, but I'm like, you know, I have to really buckle down here and get a few of those done. You know,
it's hard.
It's hard to dig them out and go, oh, all right, gonna do it.
Yeah, I think there are a couple on my list that are gonna have to be permission to give to somebody else because I'm just never gonna finish them.
Well, I want to tell people just real quick to visit you at the Caffeinated Quilter because you also have some other groups of that people would be interested in, like your Japanese Quilting Study Group and your Janome Artistic Quilters page. So thank you, Emily.
Well, thank you.
This has been a ton of fun. Yes. So we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we have one more segment.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Join American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, giveaways, and more. Find us at facebook.com/APQ magazine. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Press and seal can be used to hold pieced units in place before sewing together.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I am super excited to have my friend Janet Clare here, who is a fellow Moda designer and extraordinary teacher. I just love everything that Janet does. So, Janet, we're actually doing this in person.
We're actually in person. It's such a treat because we don't live near each other at all.
I know. So, and tell people where you live.
I live in a small town just outside London, about 40 minutes outside London,
England. I should come visit you, I think.
You definitely should.
Yeah.
That's a good excuse. Come over.
Well, you were on the show a couple years ago, and you've
changed up and done a lot of new and interesting, exciting things.
Very exciting.
Yeah. You're doing a whole online show now with,
yes,
with what's called Create and Craft.
It's Create and Craft TV, and it's actually live television. I do live television once a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello.
So do you go into the station?
I actually go into the studio station. Yeah, the TV station, and you set up, and it's a live hour with the presenter, and it's a selling channel, so it's all very exciting, and 50% of stock's gone, and all of this.
So it's like QVC or the home shopping network.
And I do a lot of demonstrations.
That's the cool part. Yeah. When I watched it once, the demos were so neat.
Because why would you watch it when somebody's saying, "Oh, here's a pair of scissors and they're $8.99? You know, you want to be giving people something of value to be watching. So it's lovely to be able to demonstrate. And then anybody who's a bit nervous about making your quilt or advancing their skills, you've shown them on television.
Yeah.
And they can record it and watch it back.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant.
Now, being that you're in the UK, you're doing that there. You're not flying to the States and doing the show.
No, sadly not.
No. Once a month, you fly in.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
So how do people around the world find this?
It's actually streamed live into 38 countries.
Wow.
So the time difference means that sometimes that's really not convenient. Obviously, if it's 8 a.m. in the morning in the UK, it's 3 a.m. in the States. But other than that, it's on the internet, and they do repeat shows. So it's actually very easy to watch. Once you know it's there, you can find it.
Okay, and I'm going to put a link so that you all can get that. But it's called Create and Craft
TV.
Great. What is your favorite thing to demo?
I like drawing with my sewing machine.
Drawing with the sewing machine.
So you put it up in free motion, and then you just doodle and sketch. That's my favorite. I like thread drawing, thread painting. Love it.
And your style, I would call it a little bit more minimalist when you do your pieces.
Yes, less is more. Definitely less is more. And I like understated and like very definite color shades. So I like a navy and a cream or a gray. And I like low volume as well. I'm getting quite into low volume.
Mm-hmm.
Really subtle. So you have to look up close
and
see the detail.
Do you also demo embroidery?
I do some embroidery as well, and I love to hand quilt. But yeah, the handwork. I think I'm a textile designer.
Yeah.
I just love textiles.
Yeah. Anything that you can just
touch. That I can do and touch. Yeah.
And do you wear your signature apron when you do the show?
I do wear my apron. My apron comes with me everywhere. It's in hand luggage when I fly.
Oh, in your hand luggage.
Yes, it doesn't leave my sight.
Yeah.
It doesn't leave my sight. So, yes, I do wear my apron all the time, and I'm not wearing it. If I'm painting in the studio, then it's hanging up and I can see it. So it really is a constant.
And you're still embroidering on it. You're still adding little details.
Oh, yes. I add a lot all the time. I've got a little green tin, and I keep putting ideas in there.
Oh, that's
neat. I'm just going to keep adding.
Describe a couple of things that are on there.
I have my motto, which is "She believed she could, and so she did." I have a little green finch badge that my husband bought me. I have the children's drawings embroidered on there. I have a cross stitch that my Aunt Nellie started and didn't finish.
Oh.
Buttons and ribbons and bits of lace from my friend who's a lace collector. It's just memories and things that are comforting to have with you, and little sparks of inspiration and just layers of life. Really.
Yeah. When you travel and you teach, you do travel and teach in person. What do people say when they see this? I mean, are they very...
People are always, they're walking around me, sort of stroking it and holding it up and reading and everything. And if I've gone to the group before and I've come back, they look for the new things. So I have to make an effort thinking, I was there last year. Yeah. I have to sew something else on my apron.
It's a job.
It's a job.
Apron's a job. And I know that you sell this pattern.
Yes, the United Nations stock the pattern. So it's very easy to get, and it's great fun for groups, and you can personalize it so quickly.
Now, what is the fiber that you made yours out of?
Mine's a linen, but I've made it out of craft cotton. It comes out 45 inches wide, so it's actually, you can use anything.
Regular width of fabric.
Yeah, and it's a vintage shape, so it's very comfortable to wear, and it's good fun. You should get one.
Yeah, I know. I used to have an apron. I haven't worn one lately, so I don't know. It might be enticing.
Maybe you need to work on that.
Yes. Need to work on that. Now, the other exciting thing that you've done is that we work in our homes. So we're designers. We work in our homes. But there's sort of a trend out there where designers are moving their things out of their home for multitudes of reasons, whether they have little children at home or they've just overgrown a space, or they need a bigger area to put all their stuff. They're precious stuff.
Yes.
So you are one of those
that... We have just done that. It's a big undertaking. And we took on a really old building. It used to be a printing business.
Oh.
And the roof had failed and the windows need replacing and there was black mold running down the walls and we've completely renovated it. We stripped all the floorboards back. It's a stunning space now, but it's taken us 6 months to get it how we want it.
Right.
But now everything's out of the home.
Right.
And we've got the whole building. So my husband works with me now. He works in the business. He works downstairs. So we're not on top of each other all day.
Right.
And then I have a lovely, well-lit, beautiful studio space upstairs.
Yeah.
And the dog can come because it's our own building. We can't upset anybody.
Yeah.
Or it can't get in trouble because Betty's there. Betty the dog.
Betty the dog.
And it's on the way home from school, so the boys call in with their friends. And to use the Wi-Fi and eat the biscuits.
Yeah. Let's go to Mom's. Now, did you purchase the building?
No, it's rented.
Okay.
Just because it's a really big step for a small business, isn't it? Just a huge undertaking. And we wanted to test it because, you know, only quite a small workspace, really. It's a sewing machine and a good desk, isn't it?
Yeah.
And a little laptop. It's the storing everything.
Right.
I also got to the point where I was doing a lot of travel, not as far as you, but I was doing a lot of traveling for teaching, and the UK is a very small place. People were traveling 3 hours to see me, and I traveled 3 hours to see them. So I thought, well, if they'll travel, then I maybe have a space that people will come to. So that's what I'm doing now. So the studio can seat 10.
Ah, so you can now host classes.
We can host classes. And a lady went from the Isle of Wight, so she caught a ferry across the water and came to me. So I'm very pleased that people will actually travel to see me. So it's lovely.
And it's not open to the public. It's not like a store.
It's not a store. It's our workspace. And it's open by invitation. So if you want to come and visit, then you either need to be a big group and make a special occasion of
it.
Or we obviously tell you the dates in our newsletters.
Yeah. So if somebody were traveling to England, if they were going, because you're outside of London.
Just outside London, 40 minutes on the train.
So they could be on your newsletter or they could write you and say, I'm coming on these dates. Will you have any open time?
Exactly. So we're there every day. Yeah. So it's not that we don't want to be. It's all to do with laws and legalities, isn't it?
Right.
You know, we're not open every day. We've got work to do. But if you and your friends wanted to pop in, I'm sure we could.
Right. And
work
if you're.
Out.
Yeah. And if somebody wrote you in advance and say, I'm going to be on, there on Friday, such and such, you know, could we book to visit?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I actually went into London about a year ago and met a group that were over from Virginia.
Oh.
I think they're Virginia.
State.
Yeah, I think they're over Virginia. And she just said, I love your line. All my ladies love your line. I've got 30 ladies traveling around the UK. Do you want to pop in? And I met them in the hotel for a drink.
Oh, how fun.
This is 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's good fun.
That's not bad at all. Now, your newsletter, they go to your website. Well, tell them your website.
Yes, janetclare.co.uk.
Okay, so, and that's C-L-A-R-E. Yeah, so it's Claire. Now,
Claire.
So in your, what do you do in your newsletter?
The newsletter,
Because you have fun stuff.
I do have fun stuff. We try to make it so that it's worth opening. Really good fun. So I do a mystery quilt along every year.
Yes.
So last year we did wildflowers. So it wasn't
gorgeous.
So much of a mystery after the first couple of months. Oh, it's another wildflower. We've got this. But this year's is a complete mystery. And it's called Welcome Home.
Yeah.
And it's just about home as a feeling and building all the memories. And I like to stitch memories in cloth. So it's about families and pets and calming down and appreciating what you have. And so that's all coming along. You'll get a free pattern every month when you sign up.
And then you have a Facebook group.
I do. And everyone is so kind and, you know, supportive of each other, and they're all sharing photos of what they've made and encouraging others to join. It's such a fantastic community.
Yeah, I love the Facebook
groups.
You know, and just the eye candy. You go in there and see incredible things every time.
Exactly.
So what is your current fabric line that's in stores now?
The one in stores is called Abade, which is a love song to the dawn. And it's inspired by the really early morning light when it's just breaking into that blue sky. And that's I think that's in the stores now. And I've still got some flight left around. Yeah. Yeah, so that's in stores now. It's called Abade. My favourite indigo colour palette with some greys and some really warm creams in there. Yeah. Quite geometric, quite manly, masculine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what about patterns? What sort of have you been designing besides the mystery for your newsletter?
I always try to have something on the go.
Yeah.
So I have my own pattern line, which tend to be scrappy and often smaller projects with a lot of applique in. And then I obviously design for the fabric lines as well. And they tend to be more geometric in piece just because it's easily replicable by other stores, isn't it? And it's self yardage. That's what we're about.
Yeah. We'll show them how to use your...
Give them ideas for using it. And playing with the color tone and the palette and just helping people through that process.
Yeah. Neat. Well, Janet, this has been so much fun.
Nice to see you.
Yes, nice to be able to do this in person. So this is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting's talk show. You can visit American Patchwork at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me, Pat Sloan, at patsloan.com. You can join my Facebook group, Quilt Along with Pat Sloan. And we'll see you next week.
To visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks.